Session number 13359, Mr. George Richardson, reel 4.
Mr. G.S. Richardson, Reel 4. You mentioned, Mr. Richardson, troops coming back from Dunkirk. What condition were they in?
Well, most of them didn't have much equipment left. Very few had the rifles. They were dirty, disheveled, and in need of baths and cleaning. They had just been put onto trains down the south and shipped up, I suppose, all over the country. But we could see the trains just outside Browning Colliery as the main line that runs along from London to Edinburgh, the main line. And we could see the troop trains coming along. And there was one stopped just above where we were, and they were all discharged and brought round into what was a school at the bottom of Browning Colliery. Browning Colliery, by the way, was a disused colliery. We used the pit heaps and tips around there for practice. And these soldiers were brought in, and officers from other parts had arrived to take all the names, numbers, regiments, and sort them out into batches, issue them with the new kit to become up to standard, and then they were, as soon as that happened, they were all fed with the big soup kitchens. As it happened, it was fine weather at the time, and no sleeping. They were just given a meal and then passed on to either join the own units or other units eventually.
What was their morale like?
Oh, they were telling us that the Royal Air Force had let them down. The only people that had helped them really was the Royal Navy. If it hadn't been for the Royal Navy and the little ships bringing them back, they would have been all lost. The Germans had everything, we had nothing. This was a general talk then, and I thought, good God, and so now I'm going to have to face this lot too. But there was nobody left in France. And I later found out the battalion I was to join was one of them that had been returned.
Did their morale and their stories affect you and your fellow people?
No, I think we'd become to accept our lot. I'd become to accept our lot. I knew how to use a rifle. I was a trained signaller, and when we put on guard duty. And I was on guard duty there was a mainline bridge over the River Wear, and that was drilled and ready for blowing up. And from Meadowfield, there was a main road that led down to that bridge, and there was a roadblock down there. We also had troops in bell tents, about 12 guard on each bell tent on each side of the river, just there to guard the bridge to make sure there was no sabotage, because there was a main viaduct on the main line between Durham City and Darlington.
Were any defences being dug or constructed in case there was an invasion?
Not, except for the area shelters that were being made all over the country. No defences as such, except that places were already, main offices and that were already sandbagged at the windows. But we had a roadblock, which was a double sandbagged block, which meant to stop anything coming up fast from either up the road or down the road. And I was on guard duty there one night. There was two of us, and our guard post was up at our own office, and we had to, it was too much down, relieved us, and too much stuff, left and too much stuff back to the billet. That was all relieved down there. We didn't have a guard, sentry post as such, just two sentries there. And I'll never forget that when I think it was the second time I did this duty, and on gardening labour night. On one, and either picket a 2 hours on, 4 hours off, either picket in the MT or on one of these roadblocks or down at the river. And those down at the river seemed to have a cushy job, and we did. Anyway, this was all our defence company that were being trained, that were taking up these positions. And this other private and I were on this with fully loaded rifles, 2 rounds of ammunition, and this car came up. Very few cars running around them those days. And it was a civilian car, and we waved our light to point to stop. The driver slowed right down until he come to the first row of blocks, and then he revved up and went through. We zigzagged and through. We both picked our rifles up into the firing position and fired. We thought, we've got one here. The Germans just arrived. We both fired and punctured the car. The driver immediately stopped. British officer got out and started cursing us no help. And he turned out to be the orderly officer. I am the orderly officer, you bloody fool. What are you trying to kill me? Something like that. But we had to report to company headquarters the next day. And when we explained what happened, the company commander just grinned under his hand and told us that our charge was dismissed. That's what we were there for. And when we went out, we could hear rumshins going on. That officer was giving a right rolling in. And they said, what do you think we've got soldiers standing down there for? Well, he was just a young second lieutenant.
Don't remember his name?
No. He was just testing us. You know, only officer. So that was the first real bullet that I fired in anger, and I thought I'd got a German fifth commissar that had arrived, but it wasn't. It was the only officer.
What was the mood of the people around you at this time, with people coming back from Dunkirk and, of course, defeat and disaster?
Yes, well, they were very despondent. They thought that the Royal Air Force had let them down. They'd been dive bombed by Stukas. They'd been shelled, and nothing seemed to. At one stage, some of them had even told us that they'd even made advances, especially around the Arras area, and they thought that they had the Germans on their own. It was only for a short part of the battlefield. We found this out from later on when I became.
Were the civilian population being affected by the bad news?
Well, we didn't have much to do with the civilians, really, except when we went home. The civilians around Brandon had come to accept the fact that we were training to be proficient soldiers in advanced training, not just the ordinary infantrymen, but more advanced in specialist work.
Where did you go after this?
Well, 14 weeks at Brownie Colliery plus 8 weeks at Willingdon brought us right up to the summer.
What date would this
May.
Be?
Yes. We'd had 5 months of training from the 15th of January until towards the end of May, which would be, I think, evacuation from Dunkirk was early May, wasn't it? Something like that?
Late May, early June.
Yes. Well, we were sent to a holding company at West Hartlepool. We put in a large. It had been a DLI territorial army base at Hartlepool, and we were put in there as a holding unit. All our names were taken, and we were, had a good army rushing through. We were there, I think, for 4 days. During that 4 days, we had to do patrols and were up on the roof with brain guns set up. And there was one night we were dive bombed and we were blasting away. There was a sergeant major up there with us and we were blasting away at these aircraft, but they were too high. Our brain guns probably only fired about 500 yards up in the air. Aircraft were probably about 2,000 feet up. But they're dropping bombs on us and making a mess of Hartlepool. So we were given our orders and shipped off down to join the 50th Northumbrian Division, which were then on Connacht Chase. I wasn't sure exactly where it was at first, but found out that it was Connacht Chase, and it was very dry. We were all in bell tents and set up on a huge sloping field. Mile after mile of mile of straight bell tents, and all in separate companies and all in separate battalions. And we found I joined the 6th Battalion General Light Infantry, and I was put into the single platoon, which were being depleted. At the same time, around about the same week, we were joined by about 400 Argyll and Sutherland Highlanders straight from Stirling Castle. They still had their badges and Scottish berries on, and proud of their badges because they were huge. Some of our officers tried to buy them, but they weren't part of them. Beautiful badges they are getting, some of the timeless. Anyway, we were all, and our platoon was made up of some of those that had been in the territorial battalion before the war and had been evacuated from Dunkirk. They'd already seen some action. There's one or two of them even had mentioned the dispatches, and one or two of them had received military medals and military crosses among the officers. And we found ourselves on Connacht Chase, very dry conditions in June, and I was a member of the number one platoon, single platoon, 6th Battalion Down Light Infantry.
Which company were you attached to?
A headquarter company, which is the company that all specialists, number one platoon, as I've just said, is the single platoon, and then we had the mortar platoon, 3-inch mortars, the carrier platoon, which had the infantry carriers, the MT, under an MT officer who looked after the whole of the transport for the battalion, the quartermaster staff, and all the general specialists that organised and run the battalion were all in headquarter company. Headquarter company was about twice the strength of an ordinary infantry company. I think it was around about 220 strong at full strength once we'd been mustered together. I didn't know who our company commander was. I didn't have an officer, but I was put in. Our sergeant was Sergeant Scott. We had another corporal who had been a regular army man, and he was a good man, but I can't remember him. Another two corporals. I have a photograph of him on somewhere, but I can't remember.
The signal platoon, was it split in any way?
Oh, no, not as such. A single platoon was organised under a platoon officer, platoon sergeant, and its own NCOs. Each 10 man had a lance corporal and a corporal. And we had more NCOs in the single platoon than ordinary platoon in the rifle platoon. And we, after some time on Connacht Chase, we were taken by wagon down and entrained, and we eventually finished up down in Dorset.
The 6th Battalion had come out of France in somewhat peculiar situation, where some of them came out from Boulogne and
Boulogne
some came out from Dunkirk.
That's right.
Did you ever hear from those men who'd been there why that had occurred?
Yes. while they were up in the Arras, round about Arras and Lille, some of them had been put into an action to take up a bit higher ground as a rearguard action to get more, the army back to the beaches. They weren't on the beaches. During this time, the soldiers that had advanced to take this ground found out that they could advance further, and they actually made a, I think, about a 2 mile advance into enemy territory. And this was when everybody else was retreating. And some of the companies that did that found that they were being cut off, and instead of getting back to the beachhead to be taken off by the beach, they came back down to Boulogne itself. And they were on the ridge just outside of Boulogne, and there was the destroyers come in. There was the Guards Battalion of the Coldstream Guards straight from London. The equipment was still polished up, they're not ready for fighting at all. They took up positions in front of these companies of Durham's, and they marched back onto the ships that they come in and sailed out. How the guards got away, I don't know. Whether they had another battle with the Germans, because they were fighting fit guardsmen.
And you weren't hearing any criticism of the officers for this split?
No.
Or any of the officers?
No, I don't think so.
Colonel Miller, for example, who disappeared from the battalion on the return.
Well, we heard some rumours, but remember, I wasn't there. And of course, and we were hearing it from men. And of course, because I was in the single battalion, there were men that hadn't been actually doing the fighting. There were men that were doing the backing up, which was what the single platoon was supposed to be for. We weren't always used as a single one. The first colonel that we had in our single battalion, Colonel Battiscombe, he used to put us in with the infantry companies doing advance battle charges with bayonet charges. We didn't have any single whatever to do. As a matter of fact, I think he thought that single was a waste of time, Battiscombe. I'm sure he did. It wasn't until later that they found out that they needed communications between companies and battalion headquarters, and battalion headquarters and brigade headquarters, that they found out that signals were really necessary. This was happening slowly during the process. We found out that we become more and more important to the battalion. And I think later on, especially in the Normandy landings, when I found myself as a corporal to corporal signaller in a carrier with another signaller with the second in command, Major Ward, and he took us out, and I had to we went all the way around there. But this is in advance of my story.
What were you doing down in Dorset?
We were expecting an invasion straight across the channel, and our companies were dug in along the Chesil Beach. Chesil Beach is a very small pebbly beach, and we used to go down there to help the troops lay sandbag dugouts and all the rest of it. And because the sea came in very fast, it used to rise up Chesil Beach, and behind Chesil Beach there was a big ditch which also used to fill up with water. So anybody that was on the beach when the tide was in was stranded until the tide went out. They did make bridges across, wooden bridges across, in to go backwards and forwards, and most of the billets were back up on high ground.
How were you billeted?
Well, I was in Lytton Cheney with Headquarter Company. Now, I didn't know who my officer was at the time. I was in the Singham Town, and we used to stand to, and I was built in an old house, thatched roof, and It was an old barn, actually. I remember it because just across the road was a pub, and we went up across there for the only drink we could get was cider. And we found out that 2 pints of rough cider was more than we could stand. Anyway, we stood to every night at dusk, and the company commander. And the first time I knew that we had a company commander. And he came marching out from his house up on the top of Linton Chamey. He came out dressed in traditional First World War leggings, knee breeches, and looking as smart as any company commander could, even if it was out in the bay, Major Watson, company commander of Headquarter Company. And he came along, and inspectors all were all stood to with full packs, fully loaded rifles, and we all inspected when all the company was finally satisfied that everything was in order, and he would stand down at, as soon as it got dark, and that was about it. About half an hour stand to every morning, every valley, every evening. During this time, on our first pay parade in Linton Chamey, I crossed singles on my arm, and an officer came along and said, I'm looking for any man who have had experience in surveying. So I stepped forward and says, I have, sir. What experience have you had? I said, I've been going to Sunderland Technical College, I've been drawing mine plans, and experience with small theodolites, and I'd done the pit. He said, excellent. I want you to report to the intelligence officer. And there was a small detachment of us, all put into a billet right next to battalion quarters, and I became a member of the intelligence section. We mostly made lance corporals, and we had to go out around the area, and from 1-inch ordnance surveyor maps, we would enlarge them to 6-inch to the mile maps, and drawing all the billets in our area, and I was sent out eventually to other companies to drawing areas. After we'd made them up. During this short time, while I was in the intelligence section, we were going up onto a hill called Punk Knoll, which overlooked the coast, and our battalion headquarters made a strong dugout into the hillside, all sandbagged. We had a signal office next to it, fully equipped. We had an intelligence office. We also, in front of each of our company stretched out along Chesil Beach, we made a hide up on the cliffs that we had telephones, and we had nightly watches from the intelligence section overlooking the sea, and sending any messages if we saw anything untoward. During that time, the artillery were also stationed some miles behind us, and regularly they would put target practice in, firing over our heads and into the sea in front of our troops. They would first of all fire smoke shells. They would land 200 or 300 yards in front, and then they would send 25-pound barrage down on one front and then move along and ranging practice too, so that in the event of an invasion, our 25 pounders of our own division would have the first crack at firing over. There was also heavy artillery stationed way back, but we never came into contact with them, except for the fact that now and again we heard these huge shells whizzing over right over the top, and they would probably go maybe half a mile out into the sea. They must have been 5 or 6 miles back.
This was a pretty static situation.
Absolutely. We were, except for doing a lot of physical training and running around that area were more or less restricted to that area. Weren't allowed any leave passes. In fact, I never had a leave pass from leaving Brandon, from leaving the specialist company until just before I went abroad. No, first Christmas, 10 months without a leave. During that time, we were scooted to on the 11th of September 1940, my 21st birthday, and I received a ring from my father and a wallet, which I still have, from my mother, and that wallet I carried around for the rest of the war in my battle dress.
Were there any particular invasion scares where you stood to?
Yes, we had cycles. We had a cycle platoon, and we also had cycles for our section, so that we could whisk around from battalion headquarters to any one of our battalions using cycles. We couldn't use transport because transport was limited. Most of the transport was behind, miles behind. And we carried on like this. And when we were stood to, we fully expected an invasion. And in fact, about a few days after the stand to, we heard that there had been a contemplative invasion along the coast towards Devon. And apparently some Germans had been washed up. And we knew that the Royal Air Force had been going over and blasting the ports on the French coast, where the German invasion forces were ready to come. But the invasion never happened, and we eventually stood down. And after we stood down, we were then moved from Dorset along the coast to Devon.
Did you see much air activity going above you?
Oh yes, we often saw dogfights. We often had to go out because I was in the intelligence section. Usually went out with our intelligence officer to try and grab as much information from any remnants of the aircraft that had been shot down, either Royal Air Force or enemy. And we saw quite a few enemy fighters that were being brought down. I never saw a bomber brought down in that area, but quite a few dogfights were happening overhead. Battle of Britain, full progress.
Were there any scares of parachutists landing?
Oh yes, well, one of our jobs in our intelligence section had been to look at all the fields in our area, and there was quite a lot up on the ridge above, between Punk Knoll and Chesil Beach. There's a long road there, and there's quite a few long fields, and our intelligence officer deemed that they could be used for landing not only parachutes but also aircraft or gliders, and advised that they put wooden spikes about 4 or 5 foot long stuck into the fields, which they did on quite a lot of the place along that coast. But other than that, we didn't have the oil pipes laid on our section that they did a little bit further along the coast where they were able to set the sea on fire. But that didn't happen in our... We were in... Our division had Lyme Bay, from Portland Beale right way around to Lyme Regis. That was our 50th Northumberland Division front.
Had you received any visits from the hierarchy, high-ranking officers?
I don't think so. Not them, no. We, of course, we had brigadiers, and brigade majors often used to visit battalion headquarters. Because I was in battalion headquarters most of the time, we used to say comings and goings. We used to hear quite a lot, but we were absolutely sworn to secrecy because rumours always flying around about different things that were happening. But they were mostly... set out away on purpose, just lies set on purpose, a little bit of propaganda, just to give the troops something to talk about. But anything that we heard, well, we wouldn't dare repeat because we were absolutely sworn.
Do you see much of the civilians?
Oh, down, not a deal. There wasn't a lot in Letenchini. Corporal, Kane. I just can't remember. He was a corporal, I was a lance corporal in the intelligence section. And him and I went round the local nothing one night. It was the only charge I ever had. It was just a small wooden hut. Our cookhouse and dining room was a big open barn at the top side of this little hut that was our naffy and entertainment. Just a small room. There's enough room for just to sit around and drink, and that's about all. There's no facility.